This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number three of Sharp Money, live from downtown Las Vegas. We're here at Bar Canada at the D, joined by Amal Shaw, our producer Dustin Sweetelson along as well. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick today. True honor we have right now, Amal, welcoming in our guy Mike Somich, newest member of the VSIN hosting team as well. He's been on Sharp Money basically, as long as I can remember, since the show's existence, now hosting The Handle with Matt Brown on weekends from over at Circa. So, Mike, great to have you on. We got NFL, we have college to talk about. We've been doing NFL here, Mike, though, for the last hour. So let's stay on that train as we continue here. Just your quick thoughts now from your own ratings on the Chiefs and Lions before we dive into the actual card. Where do you stand now? How are you in that overreaction camp, or do you believe like that was a one-off from last night?
I'm pretty certain that was a one-off there. When you look back at that game and you look at how the Chiefs wide receivers weren't able to create that much separation, but specifically Tony in the awful game that he had with the drops, I don't feel like we saw that full Chiefs team there. And if you take away the drop pick six, this is a very, very different football game. Kansas City had control going into the half at 14-7, weren't able to punch a couple red zone opportunities in, settled for some field goals. I thought the Lions offense was going to be better than it was. To me, that was one of the big takeaways here. The Chiefs only give up 14 points in this game on defense without Chris Jones up the middle. They struggle with stopping the run, but Chris Jones is going to make a big part of that. To me, this is one of those sell high on the Lions, buy low on the Chiefs opportunity, because I think this is a little bit of a false final score.
Mike, I love your breakdown of the game, and I agree with you there. I thought the one thing that got overlooked in the victory was Detroit's inability on offense to move the ball after that fake punt drive, when they only put up 7 points offensively going forward. Let's look towards the weekend here a little bit. Help people out. Give us some games you're looking at and some plays that you really like and looking forward to, just maybe from a matchup standpoint and seeing. Give me a team or two that you're looking forward to seeing engaging if they're where you think they should be.
Well, one of them, Amal, is a team I know you're not high on here. I'm really excited to see the Seattle Seahawks, baby. You know it. I'm excited to see them take on the Rams here in week one. We know Cooper Kupp is out. I'm shocked that line didn't jump up. I had Seattle favored by 7 in my power ratings in this game with Kupp in. So with Kupp out, for me, this is just almost an auto bet here, laying the 5, 5.5, depending on where you're getting it. Seattle is all systems go on the offensive side. We're going to get all three of their wide receivers out there. The offensive line is healthy. And this is a Rams secondary that is would be a good college secondary, but is a bad NFL secondary. So I think that Geno Smith absolutely going to be able to eat against this Rams secondary. And you flip it over to the other side of the ball, I'm not really sure how the Rams move the football in this game. Stafford's missing his number one weapon. Seattle's big weakness was the run. Well, they kind of solidified that on the defensive side by adding Wagner here. He's back on the Seahawks. He was on the Rams last year. I realize these were two close games last year, but that was in the later part of the season when Seattle was not playing as well, and we saw that rookie Wall hit 3 or 4 of their starters. I think this is going to be a very, very good game from Seattle. I'm excited to see them blow the Rams out on Sunday.
Really, the only two injury concerns now that Smith Njigba has been upgraded to probable for the Seahawks, it's Jamal Adams already ruled out with a quad injury at safety, and then the rookie corner Devin Witherspoon questionable with a hamstring. And just from the philosophical standpoint, Mike, when you look at a game like this where you liked it, you know, at 5.5, and I'm with you, I would have powered this around a touchdown, even with the Kupp injury news even before that, and certainly raising that a little bit. But market is now all of a sudden down to 4.5 pretty much market wide, some late Rams money coming in. How do you approach that in general when lines going against you a half point a point? Are you looking to double down here, sticking to the guns, or just laying off and sticking to the one bet you have?
Well, I wrote an article for VSiN.com today. It came out on specifically talking about week one betting. I try not to go crazy in week one because a lot of my opinions I have headed into week one are already bets that I have for the full season. I've played over in the win totals, or I've played certain teams to win a specific conference. I don't want to double down and really create additional liability in week one on some of these teams if I already have tickets in pocket that support that opinion. I'm obviously going to bet some of these games, but for me, week one is one of those half unit type weeks. I don't get up to the full unit and then press really past that until week 3 or 4 because I want to know really what to expect on the field, and I want to have some stats and some numbers to be able to look at to back that up. So I have this in pocket at 5. I'm probably not going to bet it again at 4.5. As far as being concerned, the numbers going against me, this is one of those trends that you hear about all the time. In division dogs, week one, you got to play them. You got to play them. I think that the narrative is coming across this year. You're hearing a lot of people talk about that. We've seen a lot of these in division dogs get dropped a point or half point in the last 24 hours. I think that's where a lot of this money is coming in. It's interesting, though, when you compare the road dogs to the home dogs in division, do phenomenal. The road dogs are about 50-50. So that same stat doesn't back up when you have an in-division road dog as you do with an in-division home dog.
Yeah, great point there, Mike, your breakdown from that standpoint. Just looking at over the weekend, we've got four division games on Sunday and then a fifth one on Monday with the Bills traveling to the Jets. In those matchups currently, you've got three teams that are home dogs. The Jets on Monday night, the Giants, of course, on Sunday Night Football, currently catching between 3.5 and 4 against Dallas. I think most of the market has now gone to 3.5. And then, of course, the Browns and the Bengals in this one at 2 points. Mike, for a lot of people that may not be as experienced as you from a betting standpoint, when you're looking at some of these numbers in the National Football League, do you tend to jump on them early in the week, or will you wait to see kind of where certain moves are depending on what number you're looking to gain?
It's a week-by-week basis for me. Early in the season, my bets may come a little bit later, but once we get into the meat of the season, the vast majority of my bets, around 55% of them, come between Sunday at 6 p.m. and Monday at noon. If you pay attention to the market, you can figure out who is betting what teams, what groups are betting what teams have become popular with the public, and you can almost predict the moves in a lot of cases. And if you have your own power rankings set and you're able to take those power rankings and look at them right when the lines come out, if you're pretty accurate to what the market is, you'll know which games are going to move, and it can put you in some phenomenal situations. A couple times last year, I was sitting there with -2 or -2.5 tickets on the favorite that I bet on Sunday, and I was able to come back at +3.5 or +4 on Friday or Saturday later that week, and you're able to create a wonderful middle. You really got to be betting early if you want to try and create those middles, and you got to be able to predict those moves, which is, if you really pay attention, it's not that hard to predict where the money's going to come in because you see it consistently on certain teams each week.
Yeah, Ben, I love the point Mike made there. And Mike, to your point, for people like yourself and myself who've been doing this a long time, I think 90% of the time you can nail which way the move is going to go. Now, there's going to be some exceptions to that. But absolutely, I think, Ben, he makes a sensational point here and something that people need to pay attention to. Not necessarily for this weekend now, we're past that point. But going into next week, you start looking at the matchups. Perfect example, Mike, to what you alluded to. Kansas City is, I believe, a 2.5-point favorite at Jacksonville. Regardless of how the Jags play, this feels like, to me, off of the loss, the numbers eventually going to get to the Chiefs in favor of -3 points. Kelsey's probably going to be back next week. And then also the additional 3 days for KC.
Yeah, and if you like Kansas City, laying the 2.5 now is never going to get better, right? You're never going to see -2, -1.5. And if you do, the equity you lose from going from -2 to -1.5 is so small compared to the equity you lose if it goes from -2.5 to -3, and then you're laying the full field goal. So laying that 2.5 now, if you like the Chiefs, makes so much more sense because you're able to get in front of the move. And even if it moves against you, the move against you is not going to be nearly as costly to your bankroll as if it moves for you.
And that was a game. Look ahead was 3.5 as well. So we've already seen the point adjustment just based on the Chiefs' loss from last night. That's also a great point. We sometimes get so enamored with wanting to be having the best of the number, not having the market move against us. Well, you know, if a game goes from 2 to 1.5 against you, not the end of the world from a pure equity percentage standpoint here. As we're talking week one NFL with Mike Samich at SamoBomb18 on the Twitter/X machine. We'll have Mike on talking college football in our next segment. A game that we were just discussing, Mike, though, a few minutes ago. Panthers, Falcons, I really want to bet against this Atlanta team now that they're laying over a field goal in the market, but you've got a different angle here based on some of the injuries we're seeing. How are you looking to approach this one with a total now that's at the 40 or 39.5 range?
Yeah, it's funny. I am not high on the Falcons at all, and I kind of echo what everyone was saying where I may actually bet them this weekend because of what's going on with Carolina. I think the better look than the side here is just taking the under on this total. If you look at the Panthers offense, if you don't have Chark, you don't have Thielen, that's going to be a huge problem in the first game for Young here playing on the offensive side. You don't really have a weapon in the backfield you can be confident in. And you look at the Falcons here, they're going to run the ball a lot. And Desmond Ridder, not someone I'm really scared of throwing 4 or 5 touchdowns against me. So you've got a weak offense for the Panthers, and you've got what I would call a good offense for the Falcons with a big question mark at quarterback. But then on top of that, I don't think people are giving this Panthers D enough respect. You've got elite players at every single level on the defense for the Panthers. They're going to want to slow this down. They're going to want to keep this game close, especially with the rookie quarterback. To me, this is a game that plays out in the teens. I set this number around 36.5. I was surprised it was as high as 39 and 40 that we got earlier. It's been bet down a little bit here. To me, this is a stone cold under.
Mike, I agree with you completely. I see it hard for either team to get to 20 points in this game. It just doesn't feel like, unless there's an egregious turnover deep inside one team's own red zone, that teams are going to have to go a little bit of length of the field situation. Mike makes a great point with this Carolina defense. Very good defense. Offense is not up to speed where they need to be. Even though Atlanta, for me, has an average to below average defense, the ineptitude of the Carolina offensive line could be a problem. Sure. He talked about the injuries with Thielen and help me out here. Who's the other receiver missing?
Y'all start Chark. Thank you. Out,
yeah, I try to forget those LSU guys. But, you know, the bottom line is, I think Mike makes a great point. Even at 39.5, we're still talking 21-17. You're not getting beat. It's a good spot here, Ben.
We just had Steve Fezzik on, Mike, talking the game we'll set you up on here to close this segment, Bengals and Browns. Steve does like the Cleveland Browns in the spot, seeing them painted two-point dogs across the screen. Are you on that same side, or do you like Burrow and the Bengals here on the road?
Sign me up for the plus two here on the Brownies. I think this is one of those games that we look down the line and we're surprised that the Browns are an underdog at home to the Bengals here. You look at the win totals, they're very, very compact inside this division. This is a big-time home game for the Browns. I realize Burrow's going. I have a little concern that Burrow's going to be 100% and really be able to move around in the pocket with that leg issue as well. And his scrambling ability is one of the big-time factors that makes him really tough to defend. On top of that, at some point, the Browns defense has to be elite. And if it's not this year, when to me? You've got a top first or second round picks in the secondary. Myles Garrett on the line. You've got Smith in there as well on the line on the other side now. I think this is an elite level Browns defense. And I liked what I saw from Deshaun Watson during the preseason. I think he looked significantly better than late in the season last year. This is one of those where this later in the season would probably be Browns minus two. And so for me, I think there's value in taking the Browns plus the points.
Yeah, we have the data now on Zach Taylor's head coach. Really, really struggles out of the gate, no matter the type of personnel he has him all. You have to think that's worth something in a spot like this.
Yeah, not only that, the Browns just match up well. There are certain teams that match up well against certain opponents. Cleveland seems to match up well against Cincinnati for whatever reason.
And you can still find that twos in the market. Some, though, including behind us at Circa, now down to 1.5 on that spread. We'll talk college football. There's a couple of favorites Mike likes in the Week 2 college football card. We'll get his thoughts next as we continue here on the Friday edition of Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSIN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSIN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSIN expert has the hot hand. For VSIN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and sign up today for only $19 on your first month at VSIN.com/subscribe. We're about to dive into the full college football slate with Mike Somich, who joins us right now on Sharp Money. First, though, Mike, I understand you, Dustin, Patrick Maher have a joint survivor entry. So how Dustin, also you can chime in here. How are we feeling? Week one, what's the play here?
We haven't even discussed it yet.
Oh, all right. Well, Mike, what are we going with? Pretend I'm Patrick. We'll have the three-way discussion.
No, we have to have the discussion now. We have to figure out what we're going to pitch Patrick.
Oh, okay.
Well, see, look, I know that you guys love Washington, and I am still anti-Washington using them week one. But I get it if we want to use them. To me, I created a spreadsheet for us. We've got all the home team games that we think they're going to be solid favorites greened out through the whole season. And this is the only week that you could possibly use Washington. So I understand there's some upside there with Washington. I think the Vikings are a sneaky good pick here because there's only a couple games I would have confidence in the Vikings. They're taking on the Bucks week one in Minnesota. That's a tough place to go play. I think Baker's going to have some trouble with that rush from the Vikings as well. To me, the other one is Seattle if we want to use them, but there are a couple other good spots later in the season in Seattle. And then obviously the Ravens seem right, like the layup pick, laying 9 points right now to Houston.
So we're not even going to consider the biggest favorite on the board in terms of the Ravens?
Well, I mentioned the Ravens last. We could consider the Ravens.
You should have seen the smile on Dust, you know, the wry smile on Dustin's face as
look,
he wanted to pitch Baltimore.
I get everyone thinks Baker Mayfield and Tampa Bay and Todd Bowles is horrible as an underdog. He's a horrible head coach. There's too much. I don't want to be knocked out of this in week one because of Kirk Cousins having a bad day. And I'm actually a Kirk Cousins apologist, Mike.
First of all,
I get that. And the thing with Seattle is there's a couple times later they've got Carolina week three, they've got Arizona week seven, which are also
I'm cool with saving
which are also good spots to be using them. So like we can decide where we want to go with some of those teams. The Vikings also get Chicago home later in the season. So to me, then you're down to just deciding, okay, do we want to go with Washington and put this on Sam Howell, or do we want to go with Baltimore, who's a very usable team later in the season as well?
Yeah, I just like I want to live to see week two. That's my biggest. In week one, we can get cute later. All I care about right now is living to see.
It would be so funny if Washington go. I'm just going to say it right now. If Washington somehow loses out.
No. That's why I lean Baltimore, because I think Baltimore is going to. There's no way they lose.
Correct.
To Houston.
Okay, real quick, I want to ask both of you this question. So your official play, if you were by yourself, would be Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Mike, how about you? If you were by yourself,
mine would probably be Minnesota.
So I'll just tell you my opinion. I'm going to be on Washington in week one. If I was another entry that I was using separately, I would go with Minnesota as well.
Really?
Here's the thing. I'm just going to give you this one little tidbit. You're going to need Baltimore potentially in Christmas Day,
yes,
and hope the Niners.
That's fair.
There's so many. That's why when, you know, some people say, how do you plan out this thing for the whole season? You have to.
Yeah.
If you're not looking at it from an entire season standpoint, then what the hell are you doing? Just throwing darts at the board?
I care about Thanksgiving right now. That's the big one. And similar to my diabetes diagnosis, I will worry about it when I get there.
That's a great way to phrase it.
Well, I'd prefer to be preventative than have to actually be patient compliant afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's Baltimore or Washington. I could be convinced of Minnesota, but I might hedge myself with a little bit of Tampa Bay money in my own.
It's week one, Mike. It's literally week one, and Dustin is already talking about hedging to try to make a profit.
I'm just
amazing.
Telling you, I respect the hell out of Samich and Patrick's opinion. This was the exact reason I said I'm floating on my own here, man. Because I can tell you right now, Baltimore would be my last pick when you look at their schedule. I'd take 27 other teams. Before. I'd probably take the Cardinals before I take the Ravens.
Worry about that when I get there.
Well, and that Christmas Day, you do have both Kansas City at home against Las Vegas, and yep, you've got the Eagles at home against the Giants. So you do have two other options there on Christmas Day if you don't want to save Baltimore. I think that the one argument I could make for Baltimore is that VSiN has posted up a couple polls on what percentage people or who people would take week one, and almost 50% of the responses has been Washington. And to me, that is wild. Like that you have that many people that are willing to trust Sam Howell and Ron Rivera week one in their survivor pool. And if you can fade that pick and get through with someone else, you have a big shot at knocking out a huge percentage of the pool with what I would consider a bottom 10 NFL team.
No, Mike, you bring up a great point. I remember in 2013, I'd won a Survivor contest we had done, and everybody lost in the Patriots game against the Arizona Cardinals at that time. To me, the reason why you're taking Washington here, more importantly than anything else, you've got to use 63% of the teams, 20 out of 32 teams, assuming you get to the end. And Washington, this is the only spot you can use them. I think you make a great point that Sam Howell's got some question marks. But, I mean, Josh Dobbs, to me, I thought he'd be probably sending out applications to NASA by now.
Yeah, but using Washington doesn't help you in week one if somehow they lose.
This is the National Football League. And for me,
Ronald Rivera.
Hey, Ron Rivera's been to a Super Bowl. The closest Josh Dobbs has been to a Super Bowl is watching one.
No. Cam Newton picked him up fireman carry style and carried Ron Rivera to the Super Bowl and that awful roster.
Yeah, well, when the kid was on the floor, he forgot to dive for it and try and save it.
I just know Patrick's going to text me angrily since I'm supposed to be this fill-in part of it. And also, I think it also depends on the contest you're in. So, like, if you guys are in Survivor, I agree with them all. You can't use Baltimore. Like, in my own personal pools where, say, there's, like, 50, 100 people, I will use Baltimore because it's a completely different handicap
exactly
on how you approach the full season, and Baltimore will be my pick. I tend to agree, though, that it's not one I would look at for week one. So
I like Mike's pick on Minnesota. I think Minnesota's right. A good one here. This is the one.
Justin, just do Minnesota.
No, because here's the other thing, Mike. I want to get your take on this. You can't win the contest in week one. That's part of my argument for using Washington. But I understand his argument that if half the pool gets eliminated, then all of a sudden you're in a great position.
Baker Mayfield chip on his shoulder, out to prove everyone wrong. Would hate, especially going up against Kirk Cousins of all people in a big game for us in Survivor? No.
Yeah, but Mike, don't you think it would be pretty poetic if Minnesota comes out week one and they win another field goal game just to throw it in the face
That's
of all the regression
saying.
People? I think Minnesota wins by like three or four.
By the way, Baker Mayfield from the mean streets of Lake Travis in the Austin area, being a Heisman Trophy winner and the first overall pick. Yes, he's had so many challenges in his life. Finally, he's motivated. On a dumpster fire of a team, this guy's going to carry them to third place in the NFC South.
It's the Buccaneers, too. The one argument I could say for the Bucs is this is the best version of the Bucs we'll get all year. I mean, they have both of their wide receivers healthy. Their defense is currently healthy. So you are taking the best version of the Bucs. But the clutch factor in Minnesota, they know how to win. 11-0 in one-score games. Everyone throws that against them. I think that's also a little bit of a positive for them, too, who have that mentality.
Yeah.
look, I'll let you make the argument later on text thread, Dustin, but I'm okay with Minnesota or Baltimore, because I disagree a little bit on the Baltimore side. They don't actually have that many games that you really want to use them for coming up throughout the season. There's only three home games that I really pegged as possible plays, maybe four if you want to include Seattle. But their non-conference home games are just Houston, Indianapolis, and then they've got one later in the season against the Los Angeles Rams. So outside of the division, really only three spots I think Baltimore is playable.
All right, Mike, you tell me your top three choices in order.
I would be Minnesota, Baltimore, Seattle.
Wow, you're Minnesota's number one. I go Baltimore, Washington.
How do you not have your top three ready, Dustin? When you
Baltimore, Washington, and I guess I would Minnesota.
Well, Baltimore, Washington, Minnesota. Hey, Mike, you know, I like your point that you make that this is probably the easiest spot that the Ravens have on the schedule this year, but they do have, off of a bye in December, the Rams on the 10th.
Oof. They do, but you got to dig deep. That week, I actually have targeted six different games. So you've got good teams playing Houston, Carolina, Tennessee, Denver, and Indianapolis that week as well. So that week specifically has a lot of different options in week 14, which allows you to kind of take some other chances early on, or use Baltimore early on and save one of those teams for later.
Now, the joys of being in a contest with multiple people on a joint entry. It sounds like a whale of a time, guys. I'm just the neutral observer along with them all here.
I did this with my best friend last year, and we've been best friends for 30 years since freshman year at Ohio State. And this guy's a pretty mild-mannered guy compared to me. And I was like, dude, I thought we were going to be facing double homicide charges here.
I know friends who they'll have five-hour phone calls on Friday nights trying to figure it out.
And look, if we're going to be real here, it's Mike, it's Patrick, and me. And I tend to do what Mike wants to do because he's the sharper guy of the three. Like, if he feels stronger about something, I will acquiesce knowing my role.
Well, that's a winning formula. Know your role. KYP, know your personnel.
That's a great – hey, that is a great line from one of the great college basketball analysts, Dave Miller, who I've worked with on Fox, just to bring it all together.
I like it.
I don't know if he stole that from anybody. I'm just saying. All right, so can we just say Minnesota for purposes of the show?
I don't know. I think I can still make a case for Washington.
This was a great 10 minutes.
No, but real quick, I'm gonna make a quick argument. Minnesota – if you're just being completely objective, has an easier window to win the football game than Washington does.
Feel like I'm going to have that live bet ready to hedge at some point.
That's right. Okay. You can hedge off your $300 if you want.
They gave you a discount that didn't make you put in the full 33.
Mike tried to get me by putting a couple extra dollars in. I'm going to give him those dollars back because when we win it, I want more money.
All right. I promise college football from Mike. Mike, can we get you for like 2 minutes on the other side? We'll get your favorite college football bet, then let you go. Like that, because that was a lot for Mike to have to deal with on the Survivor Talk. We still have a half hour left. More college football. That's where we'll pivot to next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings is rolling out happy hour bet boosts every day this week. Today's happy hour superstar super boost, it's hot off the presses, is Saquon Barkley and Tony Pollard, 120 or more rushing yards combined. That has gone from minus 200 to even money. Head to DraftKings now to take advantage of today's happy hour boost, available until 9 p.m. Eastern time. I felt so bad for Mike Somich in the last segment. He had to listen to the Dustin bickering hour for the Survivor entry in week one. But we wanted to make sure, Mike, before we let you go, we get some college football plays from you as well. So your best bet or two that you like for week two in college football, what are you rolling with here for our second week on the CFB slate?
Yeah, I'm gonna lay the wood here in college football. I like some favorites this week. I've got three games that I've kind of pinpointed. I'll start out with Texas A&M. I'm going to lay the 3.5 at Miami here. As Amal likes to say, Texas A&M has a bunch of dudes. I mean, this is a school that had top recruiting classes year after year after year. And Jimbo Fisher was running an offense from the cave age. So it was just like a wildly slow offense. It wasn't really efficient with the athletes that they have. Enter Bobby Petrino. They put up 52 points last week. The total for that game was 49. They went over by themselves. Miami looked good as well against Miami of Ohio, but this is just a different class of athlete they're going to be facing against Texas A&M this week. Love the two receivers, Stewart and Thomas for Texas A&M as well. I think they take care of business. I kind of like the over here as well, so I'll lay it with Texas A&M.
Like the play there, Mike. Also, it's one of the rare times that Jimbo Fisher has a coaching advantage against somebody, and that's Mario Cristobal on the other side. And yeah. I tell you what, you can say whatever you want about Bobby Petrino, but he's a great offensive mind, a great offensive play caller. One other point Mike made that was really important. You look at the last couple of years, when A&M played these types of games in the early non-con, it would be like 28-7, whatever, something low scoring. Like, they just couldn't put it together. With Wegman and company, they've got an opportunity, and I think it's a good spot to kind of build some momentum for A&M as they get towards conference play with a road win down at the U.
They beat Miami 17-9 a year ago.
Yeah, that was a painful watch. You're on them as well, right?
Yeah, I'm a Miami fan, and I'm on A&M. I love A&M in this spot for a lot of the reasons they highlighted. Sure. But Jimbo Fisher, when he was at FSU, he's 8-1 lifetime versus Miami.
There you go. Mike Somich, kind enough to give us two segments and a little nibble here, talking best bets for college football in week number two. Check out Mike and Matt Brown Saturday, Sunday nights on The Handle, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. Mike, thank you. As always, looking forward to seeing you here back in Vegas tomorrow.
Sounds good. Looking forward to being back out there. Enjoy Bar Canada, guys. I like the new background.
Yeah.
Thank you. Safe travels in, Mike.
We're having a good time. And while we're on the college subject, Dustin, you have many more plays to get into. This is a play Mike also likes. We didn't have time to give it out on the show, though. It's now up to about a touchdown market wide. I still like the spot here, fading Tulane off of the great win over South Alabama, the Sharps darling dog last week in New Orleans, a national spotlight game for Tulane. It'll be a 3:30 p.m. Eastern game on Saturday. I like Ole Miss in the spot, guys. Think this is the moment here where the Rebels run wild against a Tulane team that has quarterback Michael Pratt banged up. He had his leg rolled on in the second half against South Alabama. He is questionable coming in.
He's got a spare.
I like the Rebels. Oh, yeah, there you go. I like the Rebels' chances on the road in New Orleans.
Look, it's a stay away for me because I can convince myself of both sides. I thought Tulane was going to look way rustier than they did in week one. Thought the South Alabama defense was going to be really good coming in. They had a lot of veterans coming back with a ton of experience, a lot of six-year guys, maybe the most in the country. And I thought Tulane, having lost Tajay Spears, would take a step back offensively, and they rolled all over that Jaguar defense. So I do not know what to make of this game. If you have a lean on Ole Miss, I'm rooting for you.
Well, remember, you mentioned the USA defense. They put up 37 against the Jags. But to me, when you look at this Tulane team, they got embarrassed 2 years ago by Lane Train's team, 61-21. You don't want to get embarrassed like that. Great season last year for Willie Fritz and company, winning the Cotton Bowl, beating USC. Very good coach. Sure. Good opportunity here for this Tulane team. Let's see what they're able to do now in a more challenging matchup. For me, the key with this Ole Miss team, guys, is going to be keeping an eye on the quarterback play throughout the course of the season. Are they effective in terms of really being able to get consistency out of Jackson Dart? We saw both him and Spencer Sanders play. Will Howard even got in the game? But Spencer Sanders gives you a better threat in terms of running the ball. But I want to see what kind of leash Jackson Dart has throughout the course of the season.
Well, yeah. Look, my big hesitancy on Tulane just going forward this year were a couple of losses at the co-captain spots on that front seven who have been so, so good. Dorian Williams, Nick Anderson, each gone from a season ago. And the guy they brought in, Corey Platt, comes in. First career start was amazing last week until he went down with an injury. Had 15 tackles. He's out multiple weeks, Dustin. So you have that offensive Ole Miss, 9 returning starters back, quarterback Jackson Dart, Quinshon Judkins, the running back, and 4 returning offensive line starters. This could be a game where Ole Miss names their score on offense, and it's just a matter of can Tulane play keep up.
Also feels like Lane Kiffin, for once in an offseason, is flying somewhat under the radar.
Yeah, he is.
But third best transfer class, according to 247.
What Judkins and Bentley, to me, they weren't great running the ball last week. They got to be better. If you're going to beat Tulane, you can't be one-dimensional. If you're one-dimensional, you're going to have a hard time in this one. So good opportunity, though, for Ole Miss. Look, I don't care if they win by 1, they win by 10. I didn't play this game. I'm not going to play this game.
I care that they win by more than 7 because Ben's betting that.
Well, okay, I did get a rogue 6.5 minus 122.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
So we can be, 7 works, but yeah.
No, what I was trying to say is, from a bigger picture standpoint, this is an important game. This is not like, this is those non-conferences like Middle that you schedule to be able to sell out the stadium. You're going out to New Orleans against a team that has played well last year. And again, they're going to be eyeing revenge here, getting beat by 40.
I think that's a good way to put it as well. As we get ready for it's the moment under the sun, literally, for Tulane with the mid-afternoon kick, sold out stadium there down in New Orleans. As we continue on the college football card here for week 2, Dustin, you got a bunch of first halves that you're looking to target. Give us the thought process.
Give us teams people have heard of.
The first one's Arkansas.
I've heard of Arkansas.
I'm going to lay 23.5 because they're going up against Kent State, who UCF just ran up and down. Kent State,
0 returning starters.
Got gutted. Not only that, new head coach, new coordinators on both sides, all new pieces. That program got gutted, and Sean large anymore. I think Arkansas has a lot of veterans back on offense, obviously led by KJ Jefferson. I think they march up and down the field in the first half, and they have a very good chance to cover 23.5.
I like that play there. It was 28-3 with UCF in the first half against the Flashes, and I'll tell you what, Arkansas's defense is far better than what the Knights have.
The defense might be scoring for me here.
Exactly. I think this could be a 31-35 point lead at the half of the Hogs.
And you get that really, really weird, interesting matchup, the Mississippi State-Arizona.
Yeah.
Pac-12 versus SEC. I have no idea what to do with this game, but you certainly do, Dustin.
Yeah, so Arizona is definitely a team on the rise, but they're not there yet, and they have to go to Starkville, and I think that plays a big factor in this for me. For Mississippi State, Will Rogers is back, man, and I know they're not running the Mike Leach air raid anymore, but he can still sling it. They'll be a little bit more balanced, and I'm not buying into what we saw from Arizona a week ago beating up on Northern Arizona. Like, you can't gauge anything from that. There's nothing you learn.
Lumberjacks.
Yeah, it's whatever. I went back and looked for Mississippi State last year, how they did in the first half, and they're a pretty good first half team. Just lost my spot. They've won the last six halves and last eight first quarters in non-conference home games.
Well, remember they dominated Arizona last year.
Yes. So I'm just going to lay. I had to lay six. It was 5.5, I think, a day or two ago when I looked at it. Going to lay six with Mississippi State because I don't think Arizona has the firepower to stay in it early in the game.
By the way, I'd love to watch this game, but I have to watch it on mute. Most annoying stadium in college football, Davis Wade with the damn cowbells.
Having been to Starkville calling a game there, you don't even fly into Starkville. It's like the Mississippi Triangle Regional Airport. I mean, there's literally nothing in Starkville. I'm just saying from being there.
And then real quick, in home first halves versus other FBS opponents a year ago, Mississippi State went 3-4-5-1 in the first half. The only loss was 17-12 to Georgia. No shame in that.
No, nope, not at all.
One bet I want to throw out, get your guys' take on. I've not made the bet yet. I have a feeling this number might rise. I'm looking to bet the dog here. Kind of an ugly spot, but look, Boise State was completely pantsed in the second half, really from the mid-second quarter on against Washington. Now they get UCF, who we talked about, Kent State, just throttled the Golden Flashes last week, and it's the first trip for UCF going up to Boise. Very weird scheduling spot. I weirdly like the Broncos here. I'm all catching 3.5. I'm kind of holding out, hoping to get 4 here. Even though a lot of the metrics, analytics guys love what this UCF team can bring with a mobile quarterback and John Reese Plumlee, this is a really tough, tricky matchup for UCF, making that giant trip cross-country to take on a Boise team that looked good in stretches and then just ran out of gas in the second half.
Well, let me add to the analytics people. I expect to see a little bit of regression by the UCF offense because they won't score after playing Kent State.
Every offense will – by the way, I think it may just be a thing on the show. I may fade Kent State in the first half, and it was started with UCF – going minus what I have
six and a half first quarter.
And they 14, marched three. Up and down the field. So to your point, every team's going to regress their following week after playing Kent State.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to throw that in there because everyone always says that. But look, Ben, I get your point. This is not my kind of play where I would lay road chalk with a team going up to. I mean, this is a long trip from Orlando to Boise.
It's a tough place to play still. I agree.
It's a tough place to watch a game just based on the television, based on the stupid blue turf. But I don't think Talon Green's that good of a quarterback. He's got good mobility, lacks accuracy. I look at this UCF team with Plumlee. I think they're a little bit more efficient offensively. I'm not going to touch this game, guys. This is one for me that sets up as a pretty good in-game opportunity.
I thought about UCF in the first half and getting a shorter number. I couldn't do it. Boise State, I will give them credit. I don't know if it was because Washington was being very rudimentary with their offense in the first half. They hung with the Huskies for a little bit there, especially defensively, and I was surprised by it. But once the floodgates opened, they couldn't do anything.
Well, you mentioned that the issues for Green at quarterback. I mean, two picks in his own territory set up short fields for Washington, and it was, see you later in a game. Or I look at that box score and go, that was a much – it was not as bad as the final score indicated, but the mistakes kind of multiplied on themselves.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And this can be an area of concern. You turn the ball over against this UCF team, they're going to be in trouble. We can't wait till we come back on the other side. We're going to talk about the game in Tuscaloosa and, of course, a couple of NFL games you guys are obviously stoked about.
Let's go. From Amal
Shaw, ready to go. Best bets as we wrap up the first true Football Friday edition of Sharp Money. NFL plays, college football plays. We got it for you coming up right after this, live from Bar Canada at the D here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving you a can't-miss offer for Week 1. This week, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL game. Download now and use code SHARP to sign up. New customers can take home $200 in bonus bets instantly just for betting $5. That is code SHARP, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. I'm so happy we are back. We have picks on a Friday, picks galore, college and NFL. Back for the final time with our producer, Justin Sweetelson, and Amal Shaw. I'm Ben Wilson. Folks have been waiting, Amal, for some NFL plays out of you. What's your favorite play? What are we rolling with here? Week one. Let's go.
Week one NFL, I really don't have one. I'm telling you right now, I got a teaser between Tennessee Titans and the Jets on Monday Night Football. But what I love is tomorrow, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific time, down in T-Town. Texas Shorthorns, baby. They're going to get this one done. They're going to win this game straight up. Getting seven here. Like them on the money line. They're going to win the game. But I'll take the seven all day. I think they're just a better football team right now. Alabama, big question marks at quarterback for me. And even still, our Bond and Burton, the guy at receiver, I have some concerns and questions about Alabama's receiving corps. It's not as elite as it used to be. This is a great spot for Sark's team. I think a lot of people are so enamored. I didn't realize beating Middle Tennessee gets you this much cachet in college football. It is absolutely unbelievable how much we've been hyping up Alabama because Jalen Milroe ran around against a bunch of guys that couldn't get Power 5 offers.
On a totally broken play, no less, for the first touchdown for Milroe. Middle Tennessee, by the way, catching 21 against a Mizzou team who has no idea who its quarterback is. So, you know, that also is probably an indication there. Lack of strength. You don't want to say it. I know.
No, I mean, you know, guy went to Mizzou. I'm not going to pick on him. It's already a deal.
I'm bad mouthing my alma mater because they refused to commit to a quarterback.
Because you don't want to hear it from me. Just be honest. Let's go.
I do want to hear it from you. You're a candor.
I tell you what.
Mizzou is not even on my radar this season.
No, it is. It is for me. I love Dennis Gates' team. The way they press you in basketball, they got a great chance. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking football. Get the hell out of here.
Okay. Hey, all I wanted was for them to flash up that game board. If you're watching us at VSiN.com, YouTube TV for 5 seconds, and I achieved my measure. By the way, at DraftKings, you can find Texas catching seven in the hook. That's the only book I see around the country. Texas, you have to lay -115, but +7.5 is out there. We've gotten through a lot of your plays.
I was just going to say, I got to find five plays for the Circa Millions. I don't even have one yet. I'm just telling you.
You can't go in-game on that contest.
You cannot,
I know that. And you can't take totals. That's the other problem. Because I want to tell you the best bet, actually, to your point, Ben.
Yes.
Samich talked about this. This is a play I'm going to be on. Under 39.5, and the number's going to come down by the time we get the kickoff on Sunday. It's 39.5 right now. By Sunday, it'll be probably 38.5, maybe even 38. The Atlanta-Carolina game under in that one.
Multiple 40s still out there.
I was thinking about the first half under 20 in that one because Bryce Young, rookie quarterback, that offensive line was so bad in the preseason. They're going to have to get into a flow of things. And on the other side, I don't think Desmond Ritter's coming out of the gates taking 40-yard shots downfield. I'm considering under in the first half. 20.
Well, the congressman doesn't think he's as bad as we think he is.
I literally said he's not, he's not ready. Am I related to Desmond Ritter? No.
Saying you think he's not ready implies that you think one day he will be ready.
Yeah, exactly. That's where we're at.
I don't want to close the door entirely.
Can you, I can't emphasize this enough. For me and Amal to, vehemently agree so passionately about one thing, and it's that Desmond Ritter stinks, speaks volumes.
I don't think there's a player we've ever agreed more upon. And we'll get off this and get to your guys' plays in the NFL here in a second. But I'm just telling you right now, I've said this three times this week. Let's make it a fourth time. Best bounce passer at UC since Nick Van Exel. Okay? That's just the bottom line. He can't play. The Atlanta Falcons are holding themselves back. They've got a tremendous offensive coach in Arthur Smith. Bijan, the Ferrari's going to get out of the garage tomorrow. It's going to stall a little bit because of the fact that they're going up against that Carolina front, and Desmond Ritter's not going to threaten that secondary for the Panthers.
I mean, that's my argument. The Carolina defense is, I mean, regardless of what you get offensively on the Carolina side, good to keep this within the 3.5. This is actually a contest consideration for me. It takes a steel stomach to, at least in my mind, to want to do it, given the state of Carolina. All right, Dustin, we talked a lot of college. What are you going with NFL-wise?
NFL, I'm on the Browns, catching two division dogs last 7 years, 72.1% week one. Division dogs at home, 15-2 ATS run. So that applies to them. It also applies to a kind of a hold-your-nose play. I'm going to bet on the Colts catching. It's down to 4.5.
Whoa. Partially, Shaq Leonard, formerly known as Darius Leonard, he is clear concussion protocol. That's a huge development for an Indy defense that needs him desperately.
And then another play, I'm going to be on Pittsburgh +2.5. Tomlin as an underdog, 53-30-4. That's 64% ATS. Shanahan 1-5 ATS in week one games. That's what I've marked all summer. I'd really be kicking myself if I did not end up betting it. Also, going to be on the Commanders first half laying 4.5. And Dallas first half minus 2.5. I think the Giants are a second half team. Dak Prescott has been one of the most profitable quarterbacks in primetime. I think he's going to come out of the gates and look good, have a lead at the half. So I'm going to lay 2.5 there. And I'm thinking about for the NFL, Seattle first half minus 2.5. Matthew Stafford isn't good against teams above 500. 30-62 straight up. It's a tough place to play in Seattle. He's not going to have Cooper Kupp. Don't even know who half the players are on that Rams roster anymore. So I'm cool with laying the 2.5 just under a field goal with Seattle at home in the opener in the first half.
Especially that number down to 4.5 at a lot of shops, which boggles my mind, Amal. I get that there's defensive injuries, but what are we really getting out of the Rams? Now, you can't just make the argument, well, it's a divisional dog and it's week one. There needs to be something more than just that.
I'm not even high on Seattle, by the way, but I'm going to place that bet.
I'll probably end up on the Hawks in the contest. I'm going to tell you right now, and I generally, in NFL, I play mostly dogs, but I think the Rams are really bad. And I don't get why this line is not 6. To your guys' point, what is it about the Rams that people see? Maybe there's something I'm missing with them?
Sean McVay obsession?
Well, last time I checked, he didn't make any tackles last year.
That is a valid statement, valid point. It's very, very, very true. Even with the Christian Watson news, I think my favorite play, it's been this way all summer, and I will not go away from it, even though as a quarterback coming into his first season as a full-time starter, does not have his top weapon in Christian Watson for Green Bay. I still like the Packers. I still favor them by at least a field goal on the road in Chicago, where the Bears are still completely unproven on offense, and this Packers team personnel-wise, so much better than what the final stats showed a season ago, where they were the second worst run defense in the league.
Yeah, a couple of great points you make there. There's some deficiency with the Bears. I'm going to in-game this play. Just real quick, before you decide to bet the Packers, because Ben said it, two things to note. Ben's a former season ticket holder of the Packers,
that is
also
not true.
In the ownership stake.
That is.
I'm sorry, you attended 7 of 8 games per year. 87% attendance rate. Not 100, but 87.5.
The most games I attended in a single year was the infamous 2011 season when I went to Packers Chiefs when they were 13-0 at Arrowhead, lost a game outright, then went to Packers Giants at Lambeau when they were 15-1, 7.5-point divisional favorites, lost outright. Have only been to like one game since.
I just don't know why doesn't he say he's going to be at Soldier Field Sunday with a cheese head on.
I'll be on air. I'll be in this actual seat, so it's impossible.
We'd be wearing a Brett Favre jersey, a Bart Starr. I'm on
green. No, I will be wearing a Ben Wilson jersey, fullback 1969, Super Bowl two winning Vince Lombardi backfield.
I thought maybe you had a Bill Curry jersey.
I love when we get the immaculate grid with Packers and Team B. I love finding the most random guy. Like the other day, Packers Niners, Steve Bono. Great answer for that.
And anybody else you're looking at, though? I don't think it's a bad play. I'm just giving you a hard time because I know you're a Packers fan.
But you go back to like Fuzzy Thurston, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Obviously.
Who?
I was thinking, Zeke Bratkowski is kind of my, that's right.
Don Majkowski, baby. Magic Man, number 7.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm very tempted. I understand where there's love for New England in week one, but that's still a completely battered offensive line. Yeah. I'm seeing Philadelphia down to they've dipped down to 3.5. This could be, depending on where this number goes. If I don't think this will get down to 3, guys, but it's kind of a similar thought to what I had last night, taking Kansas City on a cheap money line paired with Baltimore. You can get those two right around minus 190 right now on Philadelphia and the 425 on Baltimore. It's about a minus 110 play, so I happily will make that bet. I think Philadelphia wins and wouldn't be surprised if they win by margin.
Anything else for you?
That's all I'm throwing out for now.
I have a few college games I didn't throw out there yet. SMU plus 17, just a vibe thing.
Against Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know Oklahoma dropped 73 on Arkansas State or whatever it was a week ago. I don't think they're quite the offensive juggernaut back to when Lincoln Riley was there. And I think SMU, I like betting on these schools where like they were overlooked by the bigger program, a lot of these prospects. I think 17 is way too much, and that number has moved a lot. UConn, Georgia State, over 53.5. I could give you a breakdown. Nobody cares, but I think it's going to be a track meet. Also, James Madison, minus 6 at Virginia. Virginia's really bad. James Madison's really good. That's all you need to know. And then Jacksonville State, first half, plus 7.5. I think this is a one where they can keep pace with Coastal Carolina in the first half with their run game, control the clock, and maybe lose it in the second half.
Yeah, Virginia's a bad football team. I think Tony Elliott will be out at the end of the year. Real quick, we got about a minute left. Ben, tomorrow, U.S. Open, Coco Gauff going for her first title, the 19-year-old winner or no against Sabalenka?
I like Sabalenka. I've been a huge pro Sabalenka, a supporter in the market for some time. Comes back from losing the first set 6-love, back-to-back breakers against Madison Keys last night. Coco Gauff's been on an absolute heater, Amal, for the better part of 2 months. really tough spot going up against a player of Sabalenka's ilk who's been in this position before, unlike Goff.
I agree with you. I would tell you I like Sabalenka, but then Dustin would say, how can you, Mr. Pro-American, go against an American and go with a Russian? So I'm not going to go with Sabalenka here for the record, Dustin.
I think the most American thing to do, though, is to be a capitalist. And the capitalist in America would make money off they like best.
Hey, you know what? Shorthorns, baby. Horns down this weekend. They're winning this game.
Fired up. Sabalenka, by the way, -115 consensus against Coco Gauff. I knew that's how Dustin wanted us to end the show. I'm glad you could do it.
Countdown to the Taylor Heineke era in Atlanta begins Sunday.
I really want Washington to lose outright. That is my final thought.
Wow, that just hurt me. I'm taking him in Survivor.
It would be hilarious. Sorry.
It's all right.
The pure hilarity would be amazing. Let's send it back over to Circa up next here on VSiN. It is VSiN Primetime. Tim Murray, Sean King, take it away next.